Hi, I'm Fred Canston. Welcome to Jazz New Orleans here on New Orleans Public Radio, 89.9 WWNO, WWNO.org. Every Friday night at 8, 2 hours of the best jazz from the last 70 years with a strong accent on New Orleans and an extended conversation with our Jazz New Orleans Player of the Week. This week, that is New Orleans pianist and composer Tom McDermott, who grew up in St. Louis and was writing music reviews for a St. Louis newspaper when he first connected with New Orleans music.
I heard Dr. John Plays Mac Rebennack at intermission of a Richard Thompson concert that I was reviewing. Uh-huh. I thought, what the heck is this? This is just the greatest stuff I've heard. And I found out what it was, got it right away, and really wigged out on that. And then around 82, 83, I made my first trip to New Orleans, and a New Orleanian living in St. Louis said, Tom, if you do nothing else when you go down there, make sure you see James Booker.
Lots more coming up from Tom McDermott in just about 45 minutes here on Jazz New Orleans. Right now, great guitar work from Frank Vanola, title tune from Let It Happen. Thank you. guitarist Frank Vinola. Title tune from Let It Happen. Jazz New Orleans, 89.9 WWNO, WWNO.org, New Orleans Public Radio. Hi, I'm Fred Caston. Very nice to have you along for Jazz New Orleans tonight. Made possible thanks to the generosity of anonymous New Orleans music lovers. The music lovers at Snug Harbor Jazz Bistro, 626 Frenchman Street. Complete schedule information available at snugjazz.com. And the folks at Hopper's Cart and Van, 5601 Magazine Street, just across from Whole Foods. Wines as unique as New Orleans. The great tennis champion and equal rights advocate Billie Jean King has been making the rounds of the talk shows here in recent days, Colbert Report and Fresh Air among them, in conjunction with a PBS American Masters documentary about her life. And that put me in mind of this Dave Stryker reading one of the big hits from Michael Jackson's Thriller, Michael Jackson's Billie Jean. Thank you.
Jamaica call him Sly Mongoose. Mongoose fool a preacher named Reverend Bedwood and cause trouble. Sly Mongoose, your name gone abroad. Sly Mongoose, your name gone abroad. Mongoose go in a Bedwood kitchen, steal out one of him righteous chicken, put it in a him waistcoat pocket. Sly Mongoose, Sly Mongoose, your name gone abroad. Sly Mongoose, yes, your name gone abroad. Mango say him a Bedwood member. Bedwood say him don't quite remember. Mango say him joined last September. Sly Mongoose, Mongoose.
Astral Project with Steve Mazankowski's Sidewalk Strut, one of a number of tunes that Steve has composed through the years, ritually evoking New Orleans people, places, and culture. And Monty Alexander with a great Jamaican folk song, Sly Mongoose, Your Name Gone Abroad. Jazz New Orleans, 89.9 WWNO, WWNO.org. Still to come, Ellis Marcellus with a beautiful theme from the movies. And we continue our survey, in fact, complete it, of the great Miles Davis recording released in 1959, Kinda Blue. Right now, Sonny Rollins with this Rodgers and Hart tune from their 1937 musical Babes in Arms, Where or When?
Thank you. Thank you.
Miles Davis, Blue in Green, completing our survey over recent weeks of his great 1959 release, Kinda Blue. Up next, our Jazz New Orleans Player of the Week extended conversation with New Orleans pianist and composer Tom McDermott. Tom McDermott grew up in the St. Louis suburb of Kirkwood, Missouri.
It's my mother's pianist, and I had five siblings, and we were all given a guitar or sat down at a piano and, you know, made to play, but it was a very gentle thing. We really wanted to do it.
Was piano what you sort of gravitated towards?
It was. In fact, my brother had been given lessons before me, and I got jealous and said, no, you know, I want to do this.
How old were you when that started?
I was six.
Six. Your mom was a player. She played at home.
She did. She did the bulk of her public performing as a Catholic church organist. You know, for like 40 years playing Sunday Mass. But she also played early novelty ragtime pieces like Kitten on the Keys and Dizzy Fingers. And those were very important, I think, in getting me interested in that kind of syncopation because I heard it super young. And she also played some Chopin and Beethoven's and exposed me to that, too. Mm-hmm.
Did you take lessons pretty steadily then once you started?
Yes, with my mom's sister, my Aunt Rita, for 7 years, mm-hmm. all through grade school. And then around the time, I don't know, eighth grade or freshman year of high school, the Scott Joplin revival hit. This is pre the movie The Sting. There was actually Gunther Schuller put out a really great album called The Redback Book, and Joshua Rifkin put out some great solo piano recordings of Joplin. I got a hold of those, and in fact, then the producer of The Sting heard those records and said, oh, this is the type of music I want for the soundtrack of The Sting, and that's when it burst nationwide.
So you heard those things, and did you seek out the music then, or want
yeah,
to play them?
Yeah, the Joplin by that time, there was a big fat book of them available, so I could learn to my heart's content.
In the mid-70s, Tom McDermott began attending and performing at the St. Louis Goldenrod Ragtime Festival.
I got to hear Butch Thompson and Turk Murphy and mostly white trad bands, actually, the Salty Dogs, the Black Eagles. But in the early days, UB Blake had played there. I didn't hear that particular performance, although I heard him later in St. Louis. That was Dick Wellstead, one of my favorite stride players, was there. So yeah, that was really a fine thing to be exposed to. St. Louis had a nice trad jazz thing going on the riverfront. Especially during the summers, they had three or four boats that had music. So it's like a mini, you know, Bourbon Street without the slime.
A heavy dose of the real, slime included, Bourbon Street was ahead for Tom McDermott, but not until he'd completed an undergraduate degree in art, master's in music, and a stint writing music reviews for a St. Louis newspaper, which is how he began to connect with New Orleans music.
I heard Dr. John Plays Mac Revenack at the intermission of a Richard Thompson concert that I was reviewing. Uh-huh. And I thought, what the heck is this? This is just the greatest stuff I've heard. And I found out what it was, got it right away, and right. really wigged out on that. And then around 82, 83, I made my first trip to New Orleans, and a New Orleanian living in St. Louis said, Tom, if you do nothing else when you go down there, make sure you see James Booker. I said, all right, I will. And I saw him, went to the Maple Leaf and saw him. And he played about 10 minutes, and then some guy started rapping on stage, and Booker just left and, you know, made his connection or whatever he did. And that was the end of the performance. But I got to meet him, shake his hand, hear him play a little. I can say I met and heard James Booker, at least, you know.
Right. Chaos, as usual,
right? Yeah, well, not one of his better performances. But, and, you know, I moved here. He died in November 83. I moved here in April 84. So I, and in fact, I was in New Orleans a week after he died. That was very painful, too, because I had a gig in Mobile, Alabama. And that really sucked to have missed him by a week, because by then, when I had gone to hear him, you know, it was an indifferent performance, but I bought Piano Wizard Live, one of his best albums, and I just, like, wore out that thing. I just thought this is the way the piano should be played.
New Orleans proved to be a good fit aesthetically and productive one artistically for Tom McDermott.
I met Marcy Noonan, who you may remember.
I do, yeah.
Who's no longer with us. And I met John Cleary.
Oh.
And I thought, wow, you know, the level of piano playing here is just, you know, it's just great, you know. Also, I got introduced to Brazilian music the first year I was here. Some tourist came up and told me about Ernesto Nazaré, so I started looking out for him. I didn't find his music right away, but eventually I did and got turned on to the whole panoply of musical, what do they call it? MPB, musical popular brasileira, yeah, you know, their pop music,
right?
And started going down there in 89. Took a while to get down there, but yeah,
and that's been an ongoing journey of discovery.
Yes,
for you.
Yes, I'm always learning from there. Starting in 2000, I started going once or twice a year, and next week I'm going for the trip number 16. So
yeah,
it's my, I tell people it's my New Orleans, as Des Moines is to New Orleans is to Rio. You know, it's the exotic, dangerous place where everybody plays great music.
The choro music of Brazil, which predates ragtime by about 20 years and shares some structural similarities with it, became a favorite compositional vehicle for Tom McDermott.
In 2004, I went with some Joplin rags, my choros, seven or eight choros of mine, a Jellero Morton piece, and a Gottschalk piece. And I recorded with three Brazilian musicians down there, and I left holes where I would later add Evan Christopher and Rick Trolson on clarinet and trombone. I made this fusion album, and it was a critical success. I got New York Times and Rolling Stone reviews for it. It's called Choro do Norte, Choro from the North. And it's still the favorite thing I've done.
So much so that five of the 16 tunes on Tom McDermott's forthcoming compilation CD, Bambula, out later this month, originated on Choro do Norte. Here is Tom McDermott with one of those, a composition of his own devising, Santa Teresa. McDermott with Santa Teresa, available on his Choro de Norte CD and the forthcoming in a week or so compilation disc, Bambula.